right, thank you so much, Jess L., for Any Chance Shadow Dance here on KBUT Community Radio for the entire Gunnison Valley and worldwide. It's 4 o'clock p.m. on Monday afternoon, and you know what that means? It's time for some of our new programming here. Today's episode of Community Matters highlights and shows tons of gratitude to some of our local Gunnison farmers, and we have very special guests here today. Alex Van Sant from Gunny Gal, your local aquaponics greenhouse. We have Sue Wyman from Gunnison Gardens, Matt and Alexis from Iola Valley Farm. Thank you so much for being here, everybody. Just want to give you guys a big warm welcome and welcome our first guest, Alex Van Sant from Gunny Gal, our local aquaponics greenhouse. Alex, are you on the line?
I am, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you are so welcome. I want to thank you for joining us today for a really important and certainly timely episode of Community Matters, as spring really feels like it's here. And I'm sure everybody in your field is very, very busy. So if before we get to you really explaining the aquaponics practice and the benefits for ecosystems, do you feel comfortable telling your story about how Gunny Gal Greenhouse was born?
There is nothing I would prefer to do right now. Absolutely. So, yeah, it really starts with the story of my late husband, Jeff Van Zandt, also known as the Ambassador of Vibe, and a love for cooking with fire and spending time with friends. That's where it all started. We got introduced to aquaponics, having a cookout one night with our dear friend, Freddie. He's a foodie and was sourcing some choice produce for a restaurant that he was working at, and just told us all about aquaponics, and we were absolutely hooked. And so I started doing research just kind of on the side and found a company called the Aquaponics Source based out of Denver. And Jeff and I decided to take a commercial course. So we flew to Denver and did an intensive commercial course with Tanya and J.D. Sawyer and Rob Tillett, and just further gave us the stoke to want to look into farming this way. And all this time in the periphery was this desire to move to Gunnison. And so we simultaneously were looking for a place here in Gunnison, as well as trying to develop the concept of what it would mean to, and if it would even be viable, to have an aquaponic operation here. And so we were really working on this idea of blending his expertise in the field of music and creating greatness, and then my field of education, and blend it all together and grow some awesome produce at the same time. So we found a place, took us about 4 years, and closed on the house here. And Jeff came out July 2nd. And then was in a vehicular accident off Ohio Pass on the 3rd and lost his life. I made a decision to come anyway. And then through insurmountable help from family and friends, I decided to heck with it. Let's do aquaponics anyway. And so even though the circumstances of the dreamers changed, the vision never did. And here we are.
Wow. Well, thank you for staying with the dream and providing this incredible practice for the Gunnison Valley and for families in our community to have fresh produce and fresh food. So can you go into what is the practice of aquaponics?
Yeah, sure. It's definitely new to a lot of people, but it has been around for a long time. And essentially, it blends aquaculture and hydroponics. And hydroponics is, without getting too technical, soilless growing. So you think of growing in water. And then aquaculture is raising fish. And so essentially what you have is fish who eat the food that you give them, which is the only input into the system. You can't really call it a closed system since there is input, but that's the only one. So the fish eat the food that you provide for them, and then they go to the bathroom. And then there's beneficial bacteria in the system all over in the water that takes that waste that the fish produce through the nitrification cycle. And that looks like ammonia to nitrite to nitrate. And that nitrate is what is in the very nutrient-dense water, and that feeds the plants. The plants clean the water and send it back to the fish. And so it is a recirculating system.
That's absolutely.
And it's all.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say it's all done in a closed environmental agricultural operation, which is essentially a greenhouse with environmental controls to ensure that you have what you need to be able to grow year round, 24 hours a day.
Incredible. So I know a lot of people are going to have questions about this. And if you do have a question, please feel free to give us a call at 970-349-7444. Kate Ganap, our news director, is taking your questions. And we will direct them straight to our special guests here today. So there must be, in the greenhouse with aquaponics, you know, a temperature that you need to maintain, right? And can you just explain, give a little visual of, like, the things, what do you grow these vegetables, and what do you grow, and what kind of a operation is this built to look like?
So basically, if you picture long rectangles that are about waist height and they're filled with some water about 8 inches deep. Well, the rectangles are about 8 inches deep, and there's not that much water in there. And then in that tray, that long tray, there is air that comes in always and the water recirculating. And it also holds these rafts that float in the water. And those rafts have the same number of holes in each raft. And so you start with a seedling that is in a medium consisting of ground cocoa coir, which is basically ground coconut husk, and peat moss. It is inert and does not have any nutrition in it. So you have a seed, hangs out in there until it becomes a seedling, and then you take that whole little plug type thing and you put it in the raft. And it hangs out in the water until it's ready to be harvested. And so I have within my greenhouse, which is about 30 by 80, I have a place where the seeds start, and then I have a place where they go into the raft system. It's called deep water culture. And they all start on one side, and as they grow, they move down the line. And at the far end of the line, I harvest. So every week, I'm seeding, and I'm harvesting, and I'm transplanting.
And where are the fish?
The fish are hanging out. They're so happy and hanging out in their fish tanks. I have 3 500-gallon fish tanks.
And what kind of fish?
Right now, I have tilapia and then some plecoscomus, which help with making sure there's no algae in the water. They're the cleaners.
They clean the water for their own environments. Is there a reason to choose tilapia in terms of their biology and their waste and the benefits for the ecosystems in this kind of farming?
Well, typically in aquaponics, if you really want to make the use of the whole operation, you raise fish that you can also consume, right? So it's another source of food.
Wow, yeah.
So when you're considering things like food insecurity or being able to provide food for a community, you want to be able to do protein and vegetables if possible. So aquaponics is a great way of doing that. Tilapia are chosen primarily because they're just really easy to work with. They are very tolerant of water temperature and pH changes. Mm-hmm. So if you're just starting out and you are really learning how to dial in the system and you're learning about the chemistry and the science behind running an aquaponic system, it's common sense to choose a fish that is forgiving of your learning curve.
Very well said. A resilient, tough guy.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so fascinating. I did not know very much about aquaponics until speaking with you. And so what do you specifically grow and source and where?
I have 5 different types of lettuce, bok choy, both baby and regular, that I change up every now and then, basil, curly kale, tomatoes, pea shoots, microgreens. And I sell them through the Gunnison Valley Producers Guild CSA, which happens a couple of times a year. Shout out to my fellow Gunnison Valley producers. Gunnison Valley Produce. I just said that. Gunnison Vitamin and Health in Gunnison sells my stuff, and Mountain Earth in Crested Butte. And then also in my neighborhood, I do a delivery for people who are within a 2-mile radius of the greenhouse.
So, Alex, let's just take a typical head of kale. How long does it take from seeding for your practice to present and grow a full, healthy head of kale?
Well, let's not do kale.
Okay.
Let's do lettuce. Because kale is a little bit of an odd duck. Kale is like a you can cut it and then come back to it. Mm-hmm. So I don't really just harvest the entire head of kale. I have a special area where the kale likes to hang out, mm-hmm. and I cut it and then I come back to it. But in terms of the deep water culture, those rectangular structures I was talking to you about a minute ago, you know, it starts at one end as a seed, and then when it gets to the other end, that's harvested. That is about 4 weeks. So it takes about a week. In the wintertime, it's about 7.5 weeks from seed to harvest. And in the summertime, it's anywhere from 6.5 to 7, depending on the variety of lettuce.
So you said in the wintertime. My next question for you is, and you pretty much led into the answer, you are working year-round.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 13 months out of the year, 10 days a week.
As many of the local gardeners and farmers here will nod their heads and agree, long days,
yeah.
Hard work. I was saying...
And it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't... For me, you know, it's... My operation looks a little bit different, but yeah, it is a lot of work. It's a lot of maintenance and monitoring of systems, and I have computerized environmental controls that I'm constantly maintaining, managing, changing, you know, depending on what we have going outside here. But I do have an extraordinary team of volunteers: Danny, Molly, Cindy, Barb, Jean Ann, Kim, Carrie, Kristen, Alex, Joe, and Garland that help me out every single week, and I couldn't do it without them.
That's called community love right there for you. Yeah, community.
100%.
Yeah, community appreciation. So do you show up with any of your beautiful food to any of the local CSAs and farmers markets?
The Gunnison Valley Producers Guild CSA, I am a part of as a member of the Gunnison Valley Producers Guild. But I do not do the farmers market.
Okay.
And like I said, I call it a CSA, but it's not the same as what a lot of people think of as a CSA for ordering in my area. I just want to avoid having people who don't live in my area order online. So instead of having an order button, it says CSA.
I get it. Okay, so your website is gunnygal.com?
Gunnygal. Mm-hmm, that's GUNNIGAL.com.
Thank you so much. My last question is, what do you want people to learn about from your work?
The main point that I want people to really recursively think about is that diversity in agriculture is vital to the continued production of food. So we keep making babies, and I don't think you would ever ask a person to not do that. But our resources are finite. And so if we are going to continue to be able to produce food, and I don't mean fake food, but real food, we have to strategically think about what is required to do that. And that means being cognizant of the fact that we have finite resources. So the only way we're going to be able to continue to feed people is if we diversify the way that we do that. And I also want people to think about the fact that we used to be an agrarian society and communities took care of themselves. You'd have pockets of communities that grew and took care of animals, and that fed that community. And it was a great way of making sure that everybody had food. And we've gotten away with that with this incessant need to truck food and other things across the nation and globally. And I'm not saying that there isn't a need to purchase things that you can't get here locally. That's not what I'm thinking or saying. What I want people to think about is how they define the word local. And I want them to realize that your dollar has power. And so where you decide to spend your money and what you decide to spend your money on dictates what is sold here. And so if you consciously make an effort to purchase as much local produce, you know, things that are being made, anything, if you can really try to purchase local, then you really are supporting community.
Thank you.
That's what I want people to think about.
Well, I'm in awe and totally inspired by what you just said. And I know Alex and Matt and Sue are sitting here nodding, saying yes, 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 yes. Alex, thank you so much. This is Alex Van Zandt from Gunny Gal, your local Gunnison Valley aquaponics gardener. And you can see everything you want to know about her at gunnygal.com. I thank you so much for being a guest today on Community Matters.
Thanks, Kelly. Have a good one.
You too. And stay healthy out there this summer. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You are tuned into KBUT Community Radio for the Gunnison Valley and Community Matters, alternating Monday afternoons from 4 to 5 with more of our local community fairs programming. That was Alex Van Zandt from our local Gunnison Aquaponics Greenhouse. Information about her amazing practice and her dedication to local farming is at gunnygal.com. And my next guest here is Sue Wyman from Gunnison Gardens. How are you, Sue?
Doing well, thanks.
What do you think of all this so far?
It's really amazing. I'm in a studio and I'm away from my farm, and I never get away from my farm. So this is quite impressive.
I'm really grateful to all of you for coming out today. It's really important to me that Community Matters maintains, you know, on-air information for the Gunnison Valley, and especially this time of year as we're all so excited about spring. And I really want to pay tribute and a lot of gratitude to everyone who is producing all of this fresh produce for us. You guys work really hard. Like Alex said, what did she say? 13 months a year, yeah. 10 hours a day. Can we start with your business and the background and your inspiration for farming?
Sure. So I spent a couple of decades, 3 decades, as a hydrologist and civil engineer. And I always had a backyard garden. I always believed in healthy food. When I moved to the Gunnison Valley, like, I bought food from Parker Pastures. I just sought out local food as well as my own garden. And after that long of, you know, working as a consulting hydrologist, I just wanted to farm. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting at my desk one day writing some technical reports or, I don't know, database statistics, whatever I was doing. And I found 4 acres for sale in Gunnison. And they wanted $75,000, but we negotiated, and I bought 4 acres for $67,300. It had no water. It had no infrastructure. It had nothing. It doesn't even have paved roads around it. But it's in the middle of Gunnison, and it just grabbed me by the heart. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is my land. I gotta start a farm. Oh. So that was in 2014. I started working the soil in 2015. And so I'm just entering my 9th year of farming, and the passion has never died out. I just feel it's what I'm called to do.
Oh my God, there's so much heart here. Yeah. I think you're gonna make me cry.
Me too.
How long did it take you to prepare the soil for your farm?
Yeah, so the soil didn't need a lot of preparation, right? Nature builds soil. Mm-hmm. And if we don't mess it up, nature will do the work. My soil was quite clay. It had grass and a lot of thistle. And I, every year, add a lot of amendments. I'll add composted cow manure, horse manure. I'll add kelp meal where I need it, because I'm asking the land to produce a lot, and I've got to give back to the land. Mm-hmm. And then there's one part of my farm where I grow potatoes that I really did have to do some amendment, because I brought in some rock and dirt from outside to build soil. But, you know, whether you're gardening or farming, if you take care of that soil, you can build soil no matter where you're at. Just pay attention to nature and work with her. And that's what I've done for the last 8 years.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your passion and your work. Yeah. So tell me about what Gunnison Gardens grows. What is your focus?
Oh, it's a long list. We actually have 24 different fruits and vegetables that we sell. But in order of like sales and what's most abundant for us, of course, we do eggs and meat birds, and we do spinach and cucumbers and kale and collards and beets and carrots and radishes and celery and leeks and daikon radish. It's a really long list. We do a few tomatoes. Matt kicks it on tomatoes, so we kind of concede to him on that. And we try to, because we do a lot of farmers market work, we try to have a lot of diverse crops. Mm-hmm. Because we can't just show up at the market with onions and rhubarb. That's not going to cut it. So we try to grow a huge variety of products that the community wants to eat.
Incredible. And you also raise chickens for eggs. I'm wondering if you can speak to the status of the flu that went around and the cost of eggs right now and your outlook.
Sure. So the highly pathogenic avian influenza that swept through the state over the last couple of years was pretty devastating for large-scale producers. But a lot of those are confined chickens who don't have really healthy immune systems. So across the nation, they wiped out millions of chickens due to avian influenza. Maybe some got sick, some were euthanized as a result. In Montrose County, I think 60,000 chickens had to be euthanized or died from HPAI. Our flock didn't get it, but we still had to sort of respond to the crisis. Like last year, we kept our chickens in their winter high tunnels a little longer than normal. But in addition to the avian influenza, prices are going up all over the place. Our feed bill for chickens this month was $1,700. And I mean, I don't have that many chickens, a few hundred. Well,
wow.
Okay, I got over 500, but still, that's a lot. And we feed chickens calcium so they can make strong eggs. When I first started farming just 8 years ago, it was $8.99 for a 40-pound bag, and now it's $17.50. So I'm seeing all of my input costs go up, but I'm committed to feeding non-GMO feed and taking good care of my chickens, taking the time to feed them right, and it's worth it to me. And so sometimes I don't know if we should ask ourselves, are eggs expensive? We'll ask, what are they worth? What is a really delicious orange yolked wonderful, healthy egg worth. And if you look at the protein content, it's worth a lot.
Thank you for clarifying all of this. I fully agree with you. There's nothing like a fresh orange yolked egg.
Yeah.
And so the immune system of these chickens is, you know, strong because they're free range too.
Exactly. Our chickens eat a lot of greens. They get to eat all the weeds. They get to eat grasses and bugs. And Alex, who was just on, we've got a deal. When she harvests, she has the little stubs on the end of our lettuce. My chickens eat that all winter long. They eat lettuce, they eat bok choy, and that is the nutrient density that they eat that then shows up in the eggs. And so it's win-win for all of us.
It is a circular system, a good ecosystem here in the Gunnison Valley. So you, what time do you start in the morning?
Oh, I wash eggs starting at 4:30 most mornings, and I don't quit working till after sundown.
Amazing. And how about your staff? How big? How many?
Yeah, so labor has been difficult in the Gunnison Valley. Farming doesn't pay all that well, and I've had some turnover in my staff. But just as of a few days ago, I finally got my summer crew lined up. So I'm really excited. I do get some assistance from Mountain Roots. I help to train their young farmers, and we have a work share on that. And I've got two part-time people and one person that I've just hired to help me full-time this summer. So we're planning to really produce some food so that I can cover payroll.
Yes, that's such hard work. There's so much to think about. Yeah. Where will we see you?
At the Gunnison Farmers Market every Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm there every Saturday on the corner of Maine and Virginia. I also am part of the Gunnison Valley Producers Guild, CSA, so folks are picking up every Wednesday and they see me there. I am teamed with Iola Valley Farm on a Solstice to Equinox CSA. We're sold out at 50 shares right now. We do have a waiting list. And then most of the folks in Gunnison know I have a winter egg CSA. They're all stopping by my porch picking up eggs all winter long. So those, oh, and also the CB South Farmers Market. That's on Thursdays. I've been doing that for a couple of years now.
Wonderful. And do you source to area restaurants, the farm-to-table concept?
Yeah, just a few. I sell to the Firebrand and 1880 down in Gunnison. I've done a bit with Crested Butte Personal Chefs up here. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm kind of stuck in Gunnison, and transporting up to CB is a little more difficult.
We are talking with Sue Wyman from Gunnison Gardens. One of our guests on today's Community Matters episode about local sustainable regenerative practice farming and CSAs. And if you have a question for any of our guests, please dial 970-349-7444. Kate Ganap is taking your phone call and your questions. And as I asked Alex earlier from Aquaponics Greenhouse, what do you want the public to learn from your work?
Well, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. But if I picked one thing, it would be you can pay your farmer or you can pay your pharmacist. Healthy, local food matters. The food that you eat, the nutrient-dense food, is going to make you feel better. It's going to keep you healthy. I'm not a doctor, but I can keep you healthy.
Yeah, good for your waistline, right?
For sure, yeah. Pull a few weeds and that'll take the pounds off too.
Thank you so much, Sue. Really lovely to have all of you here and our other guests this afternoon here on Community Matters, Alexis Taylor, Matt Ozip from Iola Valley Farm. Welcome. Let's just make sure we've got the right buttons pushed. You want to just give me a big hello in there?
Hello.
One more.
Hi.
Whoops. One more.
Hello.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So, Iola Valley Farm, established when?
Established in April of 2017.
Not that long ago,
not
really.
Not that long, yes. This is our seventh season.
And your location?
We are 4 miles south of Blue Mesa Reservoir in the Iola Valley, right near the old town of Iola.
And you guys work year-round, too?
For the most part,
for the most part, right? So what is your story? What inspired you to be a local organic produce farmer?
I had a very unhealthy obsession with building greenhouses. If you look back at my accounting notes in college, they were mostly greenhouse diagrams. So then when I graduated, I had an urban farm. It was about 5,000 square feet. And I ended up selling that house, and I bought Iola Valley Farm. It's about 200 acres, and just started building greenhouses. We're building our 17th this year. And Mountain Roots kind of gave us the head start to, I thought I was just growing food for fun, and they stopped by, and we contributed a ton to their backyard harvest program. And they really gave me the boost and the confidence to really go full scale.
You're a talented person. 17 greenhouses.
Yep.
All on this property on Iola Valley Farm.
Yes.
Okay. That's truly amazing. Tell us about the foods that you grow. I know tomatoes are a big passion of yours.
Yep, that goes along with the greenhouse obsession as well.
Obsessed with tomatoes.
Yeah. We currently grow like 2 or 3 varieties. We've grown anywhere from 24 to 30. We have tons of brassicas, which is your cabbage, broccoli, lots of potatoes, carrots, salad mix, spinach, arugula, just all the easy veggies that you can grow here. And our greenhouses give us a pretty good advantage. It takes a 90-day growing season and turns it into potentially 6 to 8 months without heat.
Without heat.
Without any propane or electricity, just the greenhouse.
So how do you take care of all these greenhouses during the winter months?
They don't need much, which is nice.
That's really amazing. Yeah. So you're functioning year-round with solar power or solar energy through the greenhouse.
Yep, through thermal mass.
Really impressive. We are talking with Alexis Taylor and Matt Ozip from Iola Valley Farm about their practice and their farm. I want to know more about your passion for regenerative practices and how this is part of your work.
Yeah, so I was really upset with the food system in college, and that's the other reason I started this. We have no idea where our food comes from. And the nutritional value in the grocery store, you might as well just eat the cardboard box it came in. And so we started growing as nutrient-dense food as we can. We make all our own compost from the sheep that we raise, which saves us tens of thousands of dollars every year. We rotate chickens, sheep all through the garden to clean up our mess, and it's beyond organic. We adapt, we figure out what works best for where we are, and we use as much permaculture and little input as we can.
It's another beneficial ecosystem in the Gunnison Valley. Let's talk a little bit about tilling and your take on it and how you work. Are you guys partial till or?
We try our best not to till. I think Sue is the better no-till. She uses mostly broadfork, and that opens up the ground, but it doesn't disturb the mycelium and all the ecosystem that your soil needs. If your soil isn't alive, then your food isn't alive. And we till some stuff, and our clay is just a little too tough not to, and we've tried to get away from it, but I think Sue is the true no-till genius.
And so the reason we are talking about this is because full till is bad because, who wants to chime in?
It harms the soil microbes. You have dead soil and dead food.
Which causes dust storms, right?
Dust storms, and if your soil isn't healthy, your plants aren't healthy, and then they're susceptible to pests. Mm-hmm. And so then tillage farms have to add a lot of pesticides, herbicides. It's just a downward spiral.
And so large farms, large commercial farms in America, you know, are full till. There's a lot of talk or conversation about how, you know, some of their produce isn't as healthy because of the tilling. So hence the concept of this natural ecosystem and getting away from tilling. Am I right? Tell me.
Yes.
Okay.
That's it.
Correct me. Yeah. Okay.
Also, part of the reason that the large farms, their soil
their vegetables aren't as healthy is because it takes so long to get from their farms in California, Brazil, wherever it's coming from, to us. Mm-hmm. And I think Sue knows the exact percentages, but they lose like a certain amount of their nutrient density every single day. So really within the first 3 days of harvest is when you would want to consume the vegetables.
And so by the time they show up in the larger grocery stores in the produce section, they've lost half of their nutrient
or more yeah
power yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't start with as much.
Exactly. Love this conversation. You're tuned into Community Matters here on KBUT Community Radio for the entire Gunnison Valley, and if you've been listening since 4 o'clock, we are talking about local sustainable farming and gardening and ecosystems and love for happy chickens, love for beautiful soil and tomatoes and everything. And let's move on to medicinal cut flowers. This is your practice, Alexis.
Yeah, so I started farming with Matt. I did vegetables for 3 years. I helped start the CSA program that we still run, and now we run it with Sue Wyman of Gunnison Gardens, which is an awesome collaboration. But then I decided last year that I would kind of branch out on my own. I'm still farming at Iola Valley, but Matt very generously lets me use half of the farm for cut flowers. I do edible flowers for chefs, Crosby personal chef, Sunflower, 1880, and anyone else who wants edible flowers. And then I also do cut flowers for weddings. I have a flower CSA share that I'm doing with the Solstice to Equinox CSA. And I also do table flowers for area restaurants as well.
That's a lot of flower gardening.
Yes.
I happen to be a passionate gardener myself. I love my flowers, and that's a lot of gardening.
Yes.
Let's talk about edible flowers. What kinds of flowers are edible?
Actually, quite a lot. I was surprised when I first started doing it, and the reason why I wanted to make edible flowers a part of my business model is because I didn't want to stop producing food. Producing food is so important to me, and I was vegetable farming for 3 years, and so I wanted to bring in something that was still feeding the community. So nasturtiums, bachelor buttons or cornflowers, calendula, which is a medicinal as well. I also do herbal tea blends and more of the medicinal flowers. Of course, echinacea, yarrow, which is something that grows here anyway, but I also do colorful versions and then use that for tea. Snapdragons are edible as well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're not as good. Nasturtiums are probably the best ones. Cornflowers and pansies are the three that caterers and chefs like the most.
I've used the nasturtium before. There's a pepper. Mm-hmm. Element to the nasturtium, right? And then what is the kind of flavor or nuance of a pansy?
That's more, I don't want to say grass, but you know, it's not exactly that delicious nasturtium spicy bite. It kind of reminds me of arugula. Pansies, most people I would say use them more for because they're so beautiful and they come in many different colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a nice accoutrement to a beautiful dinner plate. So if it accidentally goes down, it's going to be okay.
Exactly.
Okay, more about your medicinal flowers. And so how big is this operation for you, and what are your hours like, and how does this work for you? Because that's a lot of gardening.
Yeah, so I did it all, I wouldn't say by myself, because I have many volunteers, and Matt also helps me a lot. But this year I did hire a part-time person, which I'm excited about because I was expanding my operation. I have currently 6 greenhouses, and then Matt is building me that other one this year, so I will have 7 greenhouses. And then I'm developing perennial beds because I also want to help pollinators. Mm-hmm. You know, the monarch butterfly is struggling, so I'm growing milkweed and native plants for hummingbirds, butterflies, bees, etc. So I'm expanding my perennial beds this year. I'm also doing a sunflower patch, which I'm excited about. Yeah, I'm hoping to do some U-picks this year. That will be a first for Iola and for Sundrop. Sundrop Flora is the name of my flower farm that operates with Iola Valley. And so I'm hoping to get the community down there to do some family and, you know, U-picks as well.
You will see me there.
Awesome.
I will be there. I happen to be a lover of sunflowers. And when my kids were little, I used to make a sunflower maze in the backyard.
Oh, that's fun.
With Kentucky green bean tea peas for them to munch on. while they were fooling around in the maze.
That's awesome.
That's just a great way to spend your time.
Exactly.
Yeah, with the flowers and the soil. So what do you want the public or people to learn from your work?
I think that it's hard to beat what Sue and Alex said already, but for me, local is always better, whether you're talking about vegetables, flowers, meat. I think it tastes better, it's healthier, and with flowers, it's more beautiful. I truly believe that any flower that's locally grown is more beautiful, and you can tell the difference. I think my farmers market customers could tell this year than the ones that are flown in from South America and Kenya, which are the two biggest producers for flowers in the United States. When they're flown in and then they're at city market, you know, they're also very old, whereas I harvest my flowers the day of, normally for the weddings, for their CSA shares, for farmers market. It's not more than 24 or 48 hours in advance that I harvest. And so I think you can tell with vase life, you can tell by how beautiful they are, and they haven't been flown across the world. So the transportation also doesn't mess them up.
I fully know exactly what you're talking about as a flower gardener, and especially, you know, if I'm kind of like, okay, I'm going to succumb to the larger market, you know, bouquet for this certain thing because it's whatever time of year and I can't find them fresh like I would find them with you. Let's just say, for example, like, you know, a little bundle of roses, they don't bloom.
Right.
Yeah, when they're when they're grown like that. Well, I want to thank every one of you for coming here today. And it sounds as though you're good friends and you work together on the path.
Yes, we all love each other and help each other out a lot. And I'm the vice president of the Gunnison Valley Producers Guild. Sue is the president. Matt is the treasurer. Alex is our most dedicated member. And we get together once a month. We have potlucks. Anyone can join the Producers Guild. And we really enjoy getting together and sharing our local food and flowers together.
It's wonderful. It's the Gunnison Valley Producers Guild.
Yes, we have a website and many events.
Okay.
GVPG.org.
GVPG.org. Talk about your events and any form of education programs that you have.
Sure. So the Guild actually has a lot of events coming up. We had a poetry slam a couple of months ago about farming, and it was so much fun. So
We'll
make sure that you guys know next year for the poetry Farm and Garden Poetry Slam. But coming up this Saturday is the second Producers Guild plant sale down at the fairgrounds in Gunnison. So all the plants that we grow, like the broccoli that we know thrives here, the tomatoes that Matt grows, we bring our plants to sell to local backyard gardeners because we support backyard gardening. We don't compete with backyard gardeners. We're all in it together. So you can get potatoes and onions and all sorts of plants this Saturday at the plant sale. We have an upcoming farm tours on June 25th, and you can sign up for that at our website, gvpg.org, and the bus is provided, and we take you on a tour to six of these farms, and then at the end, we feed you a farm-to-table potluck-style dinner, and we did that the first time last year, and it was so much fun, and what else do we have coming up for the summer?
We'll also have an August farm tour, which I'm particularly excited about because everything will be in full bloom, full harvest. It will be the best, most abundant time of the year in August, which means the dinner will be really amazing after.
Okay, I'm coming.
Awesome.
I'll be there. Yep. So this is your second year doing the farm tour with the dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, that date for that, for the first one, is June
25th.
Okay, and where?
So you need to sign up online, mm-hmm. and then it starts at the train cars on South Main Street, that really awesome facility that Joe Bob has set up,
yes.
where the Harvest Hoedown is. It's just a local food hub down in Gunnison. It's at 513 South Main Street, so we'll meet there at about 12:30. We'll load everyone onto buses and just take them on the tour of all the farms, bring you back at 6 o'clock, and feed you an awesome dinner.
Incredible. And then the plant sale. Let's reiterate that location, time, and...
Sure. Next Saturday, May 20th, and it's the same location, 513 South Main Street. It's from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Thank you all so much for being here. Is there anything else I've missed on asking you that we want to cover, that you want the public to know about your practices? your obsession with tomatoes, your obsession with greenhouses.
I will say you can follow Iola Valley Farm on Instagram. We don't have a website, but it's Iola Valley Farm. And Sundrop Flora does have a website. It's sundropflora.com. And then also my Instagram, which I am much better at keeping up with, which is at Sundrop Flora.
Okay. And Sue, your website again.
Website is gunnisongardens.com. I'm a little old to do Instagram, I think. but I do have a Facebook page, and it's Gunnison Gardens.
Wonderful. Matt, anything else?
No, that's it.
I want to thank you for taking time out of your very busy farming day today on Monday. And for the correspondences last week, you guys are so busy, and we figured it out with the communication and texting and emailing. And being a local sustainable farmer is a labor of love, and it's very important to thank your local gardeners whenever you see them around. And I look forward to seeing more of you. I know I'm going to come to the dinner. I'm going to buy the flowers. Awesome. I'm going to come to the plant sale. So thank you so very, very much. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to our very special guests, Alex Van Zandt from Gunny Gal, your local Gunnison aquaponics greenhouse farmer, Sue Wyman from Gunnison Gardens, Matt Ozip and Alexis Taylor from Iola Valley Farms, and again, the name of your flower business?
Sundrop Flora.
Sundrop Flora, our Community Matters episode on local sustainable farming and gardening. And in light of that, it's a beautiful day. I think spring really feels like it's coming today. And hopefully with all of this water and precipitation this year, everything is going to be absolutely so plush, right?
So far, so good.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for tuning into Community Radio for the Gunnison Valley, KBUT. I'm Kelly Dole, your host for tonight's episode of Community Matters. You can look forward to NPR's All Things Considered this evening from 5 to 7 p.m., followed by Bobby's World with Bobby Digital. And we might have fresh tracks tonight with Grant Huning, and we might not. If we don't have Grant coming into the studio tonight, we'll have plenty of great music for you all the way up until 11 o'clock. And with that in mind, for the next 10 minutes, I've got some KBUTines, or actually I've got some really beautiful classical music from Lodovico Einaudi, an Italian composer. Everybody, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, that rocked.
That was fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You are listening to KBUT 90.3 Crested Butte and KGNI 88.7 Gunnison.